All of us here at the PWO Place to Be Nation were saddened to hear of the passing of Adam Cech after a valiant fight against cancer. Adam had been a member of our little community for some time, and he will be missed. He leaves behind a loving wife and two young sons, and our love and condolences go out to them and all of his family and friends. During his battle, Adam had said that listening to the podcasts on the feed helped him get through some of those tough times during his fight. So we'd like to ask everyone out there to help lend a hand to his family. A GoFundMe page has been established for future educational expenses for his boys and to fulfill his plans for the boys to see a Packers game at Lambeau Field. Whatever you can donate will be greatly appreciated and will be put towards helping this young family navigate a future without Adam. Just head over to GoFundMe.com and put in Adam's Pack - helping Adam's family in the search engine, and please give what you can. Thank you.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
Welcome to This Week in Wrestling, NWA On Demand. I am Pete, and I'm with my co-host, Johnny Cesaro. Johnny, how you doing, my friend?
Okay, but obviously, pretty much had the wind taken out of my sails today, as we were talking Star Wars before the show.
Yeah.
My very first crush died today. So
I think she might have been mine too. It was Daisy Duke. So I got to go back and look at the years and find out which was first.
It
would have been Return of the Jedi. Okay. Princess Leia one. I wasn't in love with the first two. I found her a little too pushy in Empire Strikes Back.
Too
pushy of a broad.
Just because she's in charge, you know.
But, you know, slave outfit Leia.
I don't like this strong, in charge leader. I want her objectified by a big slug.
She definitely skinkified it and looked.
Welcome to Trump's America, everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah, anyway, for me, it was a former innocent and beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. Is that I was 7, and it was when I saw Star Wars for the first time, and it blew my fucking mind. You know, it was you know, all the if you we were that young and you saw, I saw it in the theater, you know, 1977, and I remember being at home in the backyard, sitting on my swing set, just taking it all in, and a big thing that happened was, I was really thinking about Princess Leia a lot. And I was like, what are these strange feelings I'm feeling in my loins?
Great.
It was the dress and the hair. Those buns. I didn't even know, but I was just like, my heart was pounding. I used to draw pictures of Princess Leia. I had such a crush on her. But also just Carrie Fisher was fucking badass.
Yeah, she was. She was
really fucking badass.
Yeah.
Dealing with mental disease and everything. And she was just a foul-mouthed fucking broad, didn't take any shit off of anybody. And I love that.
It's really one of these shocking deaths. It's almost like a wrestler's death in a way, where it just came out of nowhere, even though after you know her whole history and her life story, you know, she had fun.
She had a lot, and she had a lot of health issues. Yeah, she had a lot of drug abuse and everything. And her books, I read a couple of her books, and they're fantastic. I want to read the latest one.
It really is. It's just like, because it sounded like, you know, like the other day I felt like she was coming back, making a comeback, and then, bam, she's dead. It's like, fuck. Yeah, it was like definitely an uppercut today, because the last notice I heard was her mom said she was, you know, getting better and stuff, and then, damn, boom. Shocking and stuff.
Well, then you juxtapose it with the fact that a whole bunch of us just recently saw, you know, Rogue One and loved it, and the last thing you see is fucking, there it is, young Princess Leia, the person who I loved.
Yeah.
So I can just juxtapose the two, whatever, I can't speak, the two images between today and that, and everything. Yeah, so I know we're starting off on a really up
note. Upbeat, yeah, right, yeah. And we're both huge Star Wars fans. I mean, I remember, like, after Force Awakens came out, I was actually interviewed by the local radio station here in Austin, and I told a story, which obviously they interviewed a lot of people. They loved it, and so it got on, made the air. And, I mean, I had people just randomly coming up to me who just recognized my voice, like, man, we heard you on the radio talking about Star Wars. That was so cool, your popsicle stick story, blah, blah, blah. and so, yeah, she definitely holds a special place in my, like, you know, really probably was my first I'm in love with you, or I want to marry her. I mean, I was always, before I knew they were brother and sister, I was Luke Skywalker, and she was Princess Leia. This is before that scoundrel Han Solo moved into the picture, and then, you know, and then he got icky. but, yeah, but, man, it's going to be so sorely missed. I'm kind of curious. I mean, I know it's not the time now to figure it out, but I'm really curious how they're going to handle it in the movies and stuff.
Well, apparently, I read that she'd already done all her filming for the next one.
For the next one, yeah. So, I mean, they're going to have to address it in the third one, I'm assuming.
She could die off screen. She could
do something.
General Organa is planning.
She's on a secret mission.
Yeah, let's face it. Well, dude, let's just face it. I think enough years will have passed, maybe, because we got CGI Tarkin.
I think they'd be a little bit more classy. I don't know. I mean, not that it wasn't classy.
How much time has to pass before it's cool and
I don't know. It just feels all right if you do it to a villain. Does that make sense? As opposed to someone beloved, you know? It's just a little different. I don't know.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Let's get out of this. We're moving off. We're going to get in. Now we're going to get into the meat and the crux disposition of this. First off, I see Bruce Tharp has opened up a YouTube channel for NWA On Demand, uploading clips and highlights of some of the matches and interviews. So we'll put it in the show notes. You guys should definitely check it out if you're interested in the service and wondering what it looks like. He has it up on YouTube. And another feature that I recently came up with, I don't know if you saw this, Johnny, is there is a lot of complaints about, I want to be on Roku. Well, Roku enables screen mirroring. So if you go into your Roku channel, your Roku box, and you enable screen mirroring, I found an app called, let's see what it's called here, Tubio, and I'll put it in the show notes. So, I'm able just to skin. Carl does it. One of our friends, old school Carl, he does it now too. He's always wanted it, but he didn't want it because it wasn't on the Roku. Well, technically, it's not on the Roku, but it's basically the same exact thing. You're able to cast from your iPhone to your Roku, and the picture even comes out even better than what I was doing when I was linking my an HDMI cable to my computer. And the thing looks beautiful because I think it runs through a different filter. You can also do it from your Android phone also. So if anyone's interested in it, it's the Tubio app, and it's free. And you can watch it on your Roku without any cables or anything. So if that's what was holding you back, I found you a solution, a workaround. So it's not technically a channel, but it pretty much is. It gives you all the everything you need. And for some reason, there's a weird thing where some of the matches aren't on your computer, but on your iPhone and on your tablets and stuff, it actually is. So you get all the matches are there. So it's something that if you're interested in it, I mean, that was one of the things that was keeping you from buying the channel, man. Check it out. Not only does it do that, I mean, you can also do a whole bunch of other stuff, like Ring of Honor. You can do that. You can Tubio it without having an HDMI cable. So it's definitely a pretty cool, and like Carl goes, man, this is awesome, and the picture looks freaking fantastic. So you're not just hearing it from me, you're hearing it, I'm quoting old school Carl.
Yeah.
And so let's move on to the actual
footage. Hold on. Yeah. Say, and I'm waiting for the slogan. Hey, Tubio.
Yeah. Have you checked it out yet, Johnny?
I used it today, as a matter of fact. Okay. I had to watch the last match. I used it while I was having my dinner. Once I got around me stumbling around technology.
Yeah, I know. You're worse than me. So, yeah.
Yeah, but once I got it, you know, I've cast before.
Yeah.
You know, like, how does this fucking app work? Okay. And then, you know, if my dumb fat fingers could figure it out, you know.
Anyone can, yeah.
It's pretty easy.
Like, I had no idea what a Roku was until I wanted to get the WWE channel. That's the only reason I got it. And now the Roku I love. But yeah, that's how behind the eight ball I am on technology. And then I'm able to find an app that works before anybody else or on the end of it.
Oh, Pete, you know, wait a minute, you mean I have to go to my phone app?
And it's like, well, what's the difference between that and a channel? Not a damn thing. And maybe probably for me, because my remote broke, so I used my damn iPhone as my remote for my Roku anyway. So it's like right there, boom.
Yeah. You know, when I was a kid, what our remote control was?
Walk to it, yep. Oh, you walk to it. I mean, I remember having one of the old school VCRs when they first started, and they had this thing you hooked up, and it was like a wire thing to your thing so you could rewind and fast forward instead of having to get up. And that was one of the first.
Our remote control was my father leaning over his newspaper going, turn this off.
Yeah. Get up. Yeah, there wasn't channel surfing back in the day because you were.
Or there was. We decided on NBC. We're watching NBC tonight. Flipping around.
Yep. Exactly. So, how do you like the channel?
Watching right here, NWA Classics.
There we go. How do you like it? Looking it on the Roku through the Roku.
I just watched the one match. I did. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I thought it had a nice little crispness to it. But hey, let's start off with the Andre the Giant. We had two segments with him. What'd you make of those, man?
Two. I must only watched one.
Okay, then you probably just saw the interview where he. Which one did you see?
The one where it talks about the Sheik.
Okay, talk about that one. Then I'll talk about the other one.
Okay. Well, so Paul Bosch is out there with Andre, and by the way, first of all, Paul's suit rules.
Yep.
I mean, this is early '80s. He is rocking the plaid. Black and brown checkers with the orange shirt. he looks like a villain from an episode of Quincy.
Wow. Hey. Now we're really getting old school here.
Oh, Quincy. Well, dude. He's like, say, you know, what do you think? You know, Sam, I think it's a clear-cut case of murder.
And you know what? I don't even think Quincy was a hit. I know, I don't think it was.
Quincy was a huge hit. It was on forever.
It was, but I never watched it. I think I watched it an episode or two.
Oh, I watched Quincy. I loved Quincy. I loved Jack Klugman.
With all the pretty ladies. That's the only thing I remember chicks. Of him, yeah.
And even as a kid, I knew that the coroner doesn't go out and solve crimes. I loved Quincy.
Okay.
It's Sham. It's a clear-cut case.
And you're a little older than me, too, so that just wasn't my jam.
Oh, it was in reruns forever, too. Anyway.
Yeah.
He's talking to Andre, and he's talking about what a great guy Andre is, and how Andre likes everybody, and even, you know, if in a battle royal or what have you, you know, he likes everyone. He's not going to try to hurt everyone. He goes, oh, no, but there's one wrestler I don't like. And he's like, oh, who's that? Who is that, Andre? I don't like the Sheik. He goes on and says, here, throw fire. He scarred me. He goes, oh, you can see the scar right here. And he wants, that's the one guy Andre hates. And he wants him anytime, any place. And this was so cool. I love this dynamic. This is kind of like early 80s, 70s. And just, it's such a great...
Actually, it's December 18th, 1976.
76? That makes it even better. That it's in the world of wrestling, there's this gentle French giant. and he wants to get his hands on the Madman Sheik. It's so wrestling, and I love it. I was like, oh, the match. I want to see a Sheik Andre match. You know, I don't care how shitty it might be. I want to see one.
No, yeah, sure.
And but so then they're getting into the battle royal, and Andre looks at Paul, and Andre is cocky because he's young here, you know. Yeah. And he goes, "So you're not good? You didn't tell me how much I'm going to win."
Yeah.
Like, oh, Andre, fucking A. and Paul, this is the best. We are now about to hear about the bargaining skills of Mr. Paul Bosch, huge, successful businessman. He doesn't give Andre a straight answer. He goes, well, yeah, you know, Andre, the money's got to grow. You see, with the ticket sales and all. Oh, okay, well, I like money, and I'm better when I know there's going to be more money. I'm like, oh, the seeds are there for DiBiase in 76.
Planting it in a territory Ted was prominent in.
And then he says, Paul Bosch goes, well, would you take a little less if I get you the Sheik? And Andre goes, you get the Sheik, I'll do it for free. And he's like, oh, very good, very good. I'm like, oh, he's fucked Andre out of his money.
Money, yep, promoters.
And he did it with a smile on his face.
Which is pretty funny because Paul Bosch is known as one of the biggest payoff guys. And Owens in Portland were the two big guys.
Well, that's yeah, of course, we've talked about that. But the fact that in front of the TV camera, all improvised, mind you.
Right.
Came up with the same, maybe you'll take a little less money if I get you the Sheik. And I'm like, that is the most brilliant thing I've never heard. Because it's rare that the guy announcing who is the promoter gets into talking about what he does as a promoter.
Yeah.
I love this. This was great.
Yeah, well, then you missed the Andre interview, which was pretty much the interview where he signs his contract, which we've seen the match already, from October 13th, 1978. This is where he signs the contract to face Harley Race in the Summit. Oh. And, I mean, we have Paul Bosch. We have Andre. We have David Crockett. We have Bob Caudle. And then they, you know, it's just great having all three of those guys in Andre and talking about how he wants to prove he's the best and how everyone just think of him as this gigantic monster of a man. And, you know, they're definitely putting him Andre over his whole entire size and, oh, you're hurting my hand type shtick. But then he signs the contract to face Harley Race. And it was just a nice piece of business. It was really interesting.
Oh, cool. I'll have to go back and check it out.
Yeah, it was really neat. You know, not blow away or anything like that, but pretty neat. Now, have you ever seen a great Andre promo? Like, for me, I think maybe the greatest segment I've ever seen Andre, and maybe even the WrestleMania 3 tearing the cross off Hogan's in Piper's Pit. Have you ever seen anything that stood out to you? Like, oh, wow, this is amazing Andre promo?
To be honest, off the top of my head, that's immediately where my mind went as well.
Yeah.
But I know... No.
Because he was always a baby face for so long, so it was so hard. Yeah.
I can't think of one. And it was on, of all things, it was on TNT. And right up before WrestleMania 1. It was right after.
Is this when he steps in all the grapes and stuff?
No. Okay. He steps in the grapes. He doesn't do the fish song. No. Okay. It was after he got his hair cut by Stud and Patera and Heenan. And he's being interviewed, and he takes offense at something Vince says, I believe, and gets up, and he's like, no, what I'm going to do to them, and he's angry Andre. He's no longer the gentle giant, and I, you know, granted, it was all just that, but I remember that go, fucking Andre's mad, and considering that show is full of silliness, yeah, this is super serious.
Right.
So go look that up. And the cross thing, I'm sure they're out there.
Yeah.
But I can't think of any.
Yeah, okay, that's cool. I forgot to tell you, congratulations on second place in the Sheeties for best voice. maybe next year, if you're able to get your, which is the one you struggle on? Is it Randy Savage or Jesse Ventura impersonation?
Oh, really? You know full well it's my Jesse.
Okay. Well, if you get it, if you master it, maybe next year you can win first.
Well, it's a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy theory.
you started doing into a macho.
I started doing Jesse and realized it was bad. I got two syllables in and it was already failing.
It's like it's Johnny's crutch. It's like it's an Achilles heel.
Hey, at least I recognized it. 2 seconds in, I recognized that was going to stink. And I stopped.
Oh, man. All right. Well, let's kick over to the first match, which is one of our favorites, Dirty Dutch Mantel. This is from June 4th, 1982, versus Frank Monte. I enjoyed this. I thought this was a really good meat and potatoes underneath match. I thought Monte showed some fire here. He had showed some charisma in the match. He had a swelled up Ron Glass look.
Dude, I wrote the same thing.
Really?
I wrote the same goddamn thing.
That's awesome. Because he really did. And in which sad as it comes back to it, he passed away recently too.
I know.
But I'm talking to the Ron Glass from the police
Barney
show.
Barney
Miller, yes. I enjoyed the rope running spot where they teased the punch, and then DeMonte goes after the Dutchman's arm, and I really liked the arm work here. I thought Monte was focused on it, and he did some fun jumping punches to the arm. Dutch, of course, was really good in the match here, and I thought he was really good at like making Monte shine. And I thought he did a good job of making Monte in the loss, where Dutch goes over, but he did a good job of making Frank Monte a legitimate kind of like someone you might think you might win a match sometime, and gave it like 2.25. It wasn't blow away or anything, but I thought for an underneath match, I thought this was like a perfectly acceptable underneath match. Well, yeah. What are your thoughts here?
Well, since there was no commentary, I just wrote down Frank Monte. I pronounced it Monte because I figured he was Italian.
Oh, there you go.
But our referee is Nick Kozak, who I think I've mentioned this before, but it bears repeating. He looks remarkably like the asshole dad coach in Bad News Bears.
Oh God, yes.
The old guy with the Vic Tabak. It was the guy who got his head chopped off in the Twilight Zone movie. His name escapes me. But that guy, you know, it's like, he could have killed that kid.
Yeah.
He's like, he could have killed that kid. He looks just like him. Dutch has so many little. It's performance. He's so good. Because they made finger wagging a thing in this. Because let's say Monte does something kind of fancy and Dutch comes right up from it.
Yeah.
And does like a little like sissy dance while wagging his finger at him. And keeps wagging his finger. I'm like, you don't know what you're getting into, son. After he does the fancy thing, yeah, he does a little, well, la-dee-da. Aren't you nice? You know, it's all his body language and his hand gestures and his acting. And he's amazing.
Yeah.
Because throughout this whole match, when Monte butts him in the stomach from the outside. The way he sells like he got shot with a shotgun right in his gut.
Right.
Oh, it's so good. I wrote down Ron Glass is huge. But before I wrote that down, I was like, Tony Orlando is jacked.
Obviously, Ron Glass works better since both of those came up.
Here's the thing. From just the distance of the wrestling, I was like, that guy looks like fucking jacked up Tony Orlando. And they hit a close-up, and right, I went, oh, no, Ron Glass.
Yeah.
Just like him. And his flat back bump is something to see.
There you go.
Kind of rolls over, and I was like, well, maybe he comes from the Lucha Libre tradition of bumping, where they take it in a roll. He was jacked, you know. I mean,
yeah,
that was
yeah.
The East, you know. But Dutch is amazing.
Yeah, of course. Man.
He's just because Monte was no stiff.
Yeah.
But he was definitely green as fuck, and Dutch, every little thing he did made him look like $1 million and made Dutch look just like, a guy you'd want to boo. I'd want to cheer,
Yeah, of course,
but.
of course. There's the rest of us. Definitely a fun underneath match, you know. And you get a taste of both guys. All right, man. Well, we're gonna take a break here, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of the Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back, and we're about to look at our two more matches on the agenda. First one up is Stan Lane versus Ricky Gibson from January 31st, 1986. I thought this could be a really interesting match just because of Lane and Robert Gibson's history of the Rock and Roll Express, but this is like before Lane is in the Midnight Express. I think this is right before he goes out to Florida and teams with Brian St. John's, because this is kind of like right when Dennis Condrey's having his breakdown. It was probably about or starting to have his breakdown right around this time. So Stan Lane's really close to joining the Midnight at this point, and we get to see him work Ricky Gibson, and I enjoyed it because then they also knew each other from the Memphis territory, so I kind of enjoyed that. So I was excited to see what was going to happen. And I thought this was another solid undercard match. I thought they did some neat stuff that had payoffs. I thought they engaged the crowd. I thought there was some nice little Memphis, you know, tomfoolery, like Ricky kicking Stan in the ass and, you know, Stan taking a bump. Of course, and the crowd's laughing. Total Memphis-y, you know, stuff, but works. But there were still some moments of eh. Still, as an undercard bout, I thought it worked. I thought the finish was pretty flat. But again, I thought these guys, I think, you know, Ricky Gibson here at this time in his career is kind of perfect in his role, where he's just out there to eat some time up on the undercard and have, and being able to entertain in a, like a low, where you're not hitting or hurting somebody, just a low
impact
match, but it's entertaining. And I felt we had another one here, kind of like, wasn't at the level of the him and Doc, but I thought we had another like low impact match that was entertaining enough. What about you?
It wasn't anywhere like that. I actively love that match with him and Doc.
Oh yeah, that was really fun. Yeah. This was less. I mean, Stan Lane wasn't as much game. Wasn't nearly as game as Doc was.
We already talked about how that was just Doc being like this goofy heel, yeah. And it worked. You know, it's like you said, they were doing this was just simple. Easy way to work the crowd. I mean, like Lane is doing, you know, he's usually a baby face, but he's a heel in this run, and he's doing heel stuff, yeah. Which is like, hey, ref, he, you know, he shouldn't have kicked me in the ass. And,
yeah.
Oh, look at my lip. You know, hey, you know, and he's like, and there just wasn't a lot of spark to it, but it's watching like, okay, undercard of an 80s show. A guy who's normally in a tag team is in a match with an old vet who, in that territory, they don't give a shit about. And they go out there and they are professionals and put on a match where there's a clearly defined good guy and a clearly defined bad guy. And the people are into it as much as they are a match like this on the card in front of a crowd that won't shit on it. You know, but it's like, oh, there it is. You know, and so you can't complain about it. That is what it was. But maybe this was the one I watched on a Tubio. So maybe I was more transfixed with Tubio than I was the match.
Let's talk about Stan Lane for a minute.
Can we?
Can we? What about you? The only really history I had watching the guy is with as a member of the Midnight Express or the Heavenly Bodies or the Fabulous Ones. I have no inclination of his. I have no inclination. I don't think I've ever seen any of his other work. I mean, yeah, I've seen some of them underneath as a Memphis, like in 1981, before he was a member of the Fabs. But other than that, I don't think I've seen a whole hell of a lot of them.
I think you pretty much got it. The only thing you didn't include was his time as an announcer in WWF.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's the only other time I've seen him. Yeah.
I can't think of anything else he did. I'm sure here and there, you know, that run singles, whatever. But he pretty much went from that to that to that. My first introduction was Fabulous Ones.
Uh-huh.
Totally. Yeah, and that was from the magazines and from the PWI's Lords of the Ring tape that had the Fabs Moondogs and Fabs Road Warriors. So I was already a big Fabulous Ones fan. So that was my initial. And then Midnight Express. And then what's funny is Smoky Mountain, I wasn't watching wrestling during that time. So I didn't even... You know, I remember hearing about him. Like, I flipped through a magazine every now and then and seeing, like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's when he had the fake do, had the
shatter. Yeah, I've seen it all since then, and I love it. But then when I did finally, like, see them for a second, he was gone, and it was Jimmy Del Rey.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Different dynamic team. I don't know. One of the things that always stuck out to me, like, I'm assuming you watched enough shoot interviews from wrestlers, right?
Yeah.
I was like, one of the token questions they always get was, if you could have a final match or a fantasy match or a match you've never had and you really want to have it, who would you like to wrestle? And like a lot of them would say, like Ric Flair or Hulk Hogan or Bret Hart or Shawn Michaels or whatever. I remember when they interviewed the Midnight Express, Stan Lane's was a handicap match against China, Major Guns, Stacy Keebler, Tori Wilson.
That's awesome.
I died. I love it because, like, Stan Lane is still Stan Lane. Just, you know, the ultimate playboy.
Dude, read fucking Foley's book.
Yep, exactly. You know,
he talked about how he'd be on the road with the Midnights.
Yep.
And, you know, it'd be like him as, like, the rookie guy watching Bobby Eaton give winos money and buying them dinner while Stan Lane was taking three rats in a hotel room with wearing a towel and carrying a jar of baby oil.
Yep.
That's how I read that. I'm like, you know what? If everybody shits on Stan Lane and his silly savant kick, go fuck yourself. I'd love Stan Lane.
Yep. One of the only guys to be trained by Nature Boy Ric Flair. Yep. Right. And remember, he had his early moniker was Nature Boy Stan Lane.
And, oh, was it really?
Yeah, it's when he broke into the Amarillo territory when he first started.
I didn't know that. Well, there you go.
But he's just a guy who, you know, those are those big runs, and they were big runs he had. But all the other stuff, you just don't see him. It's like it doesn't exist on tape unless you really, really look for it.
Did he get out from early from injury or just?
They left Crockett because he was fed up with, or left the WCW because they were fed up with all that bullshit. Like, they were getting de-pushed and getting their money was getting cut.
Oh, right.
So him and Jimmy started Smoky Mountain, but the money didn't transpire like what they thought it was going to be.
Right.
Where they were making decent money, but Stan wasn't living there. So for him having to drive his ass out there for just the payoffs just wasn't worth it. So he ended up retiring. And last I heard, he was a race boat announcer. So.
I mean,
yeah.
You got a lot of guys of his generation who, you know, kept going and going and going. You know, he for a guy who still had a great look.
Yeah.
You would have thought it seems like he retired a little early for most guys of his generation, unless he was injured. You know.
Yeah, I always liked the story about how when Vince fired him, and Vince said that. His character and his wrestling career just wasn't really memorable. And he goes, let me tell you something, Vince. I go, your world champion, Shawn Michaels, is a knockoff of the Rock and Roll Express, who are an exact knockoff of the Fabulous Ones, which I was a tag team, which I was a member of.
I love that. Instead of saying, hey, go fuck yourself, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
I'm tangentially connected to a lot of people.
Yeah. So in essence, your world champion is based off me.
I know that's awesome, because it's like, huh? I don't think that'll hold up in court, but that's a hell of an argument.
Yeah, but again, honestly, Doc Hendricks was like mind jarring, but Stan Lane alter ego in the WWF is almost as bad. I forget what it was, but they took all the coolness out of him.
He was only there for like a month.
It was about eight months.
It
was a journey.
Oh, he wasn't Stan Lane?
No, he was not Stan. Or he might have been Stan Lane, but they made him a nerd. I mean, they just made him they had him sound like Shadow Stevens, and he just lost all the coolness out of him. He wasn't cool.
To be perfectly fair, whenever Stan Lane did cut a promo, in the Midnight Express,
yeah,
he did that voice.
Yeah, he did.
He'd go, "Well, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jim Cornette." He did that, so I'm sure that was just like, "Hey, what's your announcer voice?" I only got one.
Yeah. Well, it was Jerry Jarrett was the one who got him hired, because this is when Jerry Jarrett was running WWF when Vince was. And he goes, yeah, do that announcer voice you do. That'll work. And that's that worked.
Jerry Jarrett was secretly hoping Vince went to jail so he could just bring all his guys in and just take it the fuck over.
God, can you imagine? It'd be
Memphis. Right now we'd be watching big-time Memphis on Monday night.
Hell yeah, Lawler would be champ, so I'd have no problem with that. Bill Dundee would be number two.
Still.
Yeah, I mean, hell, nothing would change. But hey, let's move over to another match. Speaking of Memphis, we have Eddie Gilbert versus versus Terry Taylor, 131-86. Man, what were your thoughts here?
Okay, I took barely any notes because I got super sucked in to this match. And to admit, when I was watching this footage, I got really high. And when it got to the end of Buzz and Chavo, which we'll talk about, and then to this match, I was just like, put the pen down and watch. And I'm so glad I did. This sucked me in completely. I loved this match. I think you might have said if you closed your eyes for a second and then opened them, you'd think you were watching something from the Memphis Coliseum. That's what it felt like. You know, there is Terry Taylor, who spent a lot of time in Memphis as well. Yeah. You normally associate him with Mid-South. Generally, that's like his home area.
Yeah, he was a member of speaking of ripoff teams, the Fantastic Ones with Bobby Fulton.
Yeah, that. Yeah, but I saw Terry Taylor in like a main event in Louisville when I was in high school.
Yeah, he teamed with the one that were Joe Brothers. They were headlining tag team.
He was filling in for one of the Fabulous Ones who didn't show up.
Okay.
I remember that, in a cage against the Sheepherders. It was amazing. Cage almost fell on the crowd. It was insane. Eddie Gilbert, and he's still being managed by Humperdinck at this point. You know, it's when he just got there in the 80s. And, oh God, I love this. Terry Taylor carries himself in this match like he's not someone to be fucked with, not in this territory or anything. And for people who are like, oh, Terry Taylor, the definition of bland, you should watch this match. Then get into his heel run that happens about a year later, which is amazing.
Yeah, he has a great heel run. Yep.
Oh, so good. But here, you know, yeah, he's got his red jacket on and everything, and he's a kind of a pretty boy. But when Eddie Gilbert starts cheating, Terry Taylor turns around and just starts kicking his ass. Like, Terry Taylor is a bit of like, look, I'm a big, good-looking jock. I will kick your ass. And I'll cheat a little bit, too, because he scrapes his eyes with his boots. And you know, just to show him, there's like, you know, I may be a bit of a pretty boy, but don't fuck with me.
Right.
And totally cast that out. And I was like, yeah, that was awesome. And then when it became more back and forth and it was going on, I fell in love with everything these guys were doing. Completely transfixed. I loved, you mentioned it, Humper Dink doing baseball
signals yeah.
to Eddie. It's great. Was he telling him to steal home?
Yeah. But you saw it, right?
Oh, I saw it.
Yeah.
And suddenly out of nowhere, Eddie Gilbert tries to slide into the turnbuckle. What are you doing? And even he was very understated in his interference, but it worked. It was all very, everything was so smooth in this. And then we got to the end where they were just sweaty and beating the shit out of each other. I was like, this is fucking Memphis. They just decided, because at the beginning, they didn't have the crowd. By the end, they had the crowd. And it's like they just went, fuck it, let's just do Memphis. You know, it's what we're both good at.
Yeah.
And he's new, and Eddie's new there. So Terry adapted what he's doing to go full Memphis with Eddie, who's new there. And boom, and then they tear the fucking house. I thought they tore the house down. As far as everything I love in a wrestling match. I love this.
I enjoyed it. I think you liked it a little bit more.
It more than you, but and granted, state of mind.
Yeah.
What I'm looking at and what I love about pro wrestling, and that's it.
I totally understand. I see where you're coming from on it completely.
And when I say Memphis style, I'm not talking about brawling. I'm talking about this.
Yeah.
There's brawling, but they're doing moves and everything, but everything was very Memphis-y, and that's my favorite. So.
Yeah, and then you're right, and there was a lot of Memphis-y stuff in there, and I think a lot of it more is like the payoffs, how smartly they worked and how they set things up, where they didn't immediately get gratification right then and there, but it might come down the line in 5 minutes, and that's kind of what they were doing. And I enjoyed a lot of that stuff here. I'm with you. I love these guys as heels. Maybe in towards the end of next in 87, I enjoyed them as just little chicken shit heels. I like Gilbert here getting heat right off the bat with his version of the Fargo Strut. Mm-hmm. Taylor has a fun early shine. And we see them working holds early. You know, Humperdinck doing freaking baseball signals is awesome. And Gilbert focusing on the neck. But I liked how it built and built and built. And then built to a crescendo where they're just throwing hands down the stretch. And mm-hmm. Taylor busts out the five arm for the win. Really fun stuff. I give it 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, and even the end, because they all got confusing about like, oh, Eddie did win. No, but he cheated. And now the referee's boom.
Yeah.
And it's a schmoz. But... No, the match is continuing, even though it's a smash, and boom. And everything was time perfect. The ref is with Humperdinck just as he turns around, sees the five arm, boom, 1, 2, 3, place fucking explodes. My favorite. I love this match. And also, Eddie, he's cocky at first. Then he then he gets his ass kicked because he's taking Taylor lightly.
Right.
But when Eddie fights out, and then Taylor almost is like bullying the little guy, like, fuck you, you little prick. And when Eddie evens it out, he's not taking him lightly anymore, and he's just laying it in with everything he did. I loved his when he had doing the front chin lock on Taylor with his knee right in the back of his neck.
Yeah, and where's your leg? Where's your more? Yeah, that was nice. It wasn't doing anything like super like wow, but it was all smart work, you know.
I saw that. I was like, that looks like it fucking hurts.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You buy into it for sure. Yeah. Maybe I need to definitely give this a rewatch. But let's talk about a little Terry Taylor for a minute or two, which is a guy who doesn't get talked about a lot. What's your favorite Terry Taylor feud or program?
Well, that'd be the heel turn with Chris Adams.
Yep. I'm with you 100%. I think that's great television, great, and led to great matches and stuff. And,
oh, yeah, it has to be.
And not only did it lead into business here, I mean, in Mid-South and Houston, but they I mean, that was a feud they were able to take into a lot of different territories, one of them being world class. When I remember them doing catcher catcher mask matches, which is stupid gimmick, but yeah, I'm with you, man. That was incredible.
Remember the because he was such a consummate babyface, but in this match you saw, though, I'm like, he's a veteran.
Yeah,
you know, is during the heel turn. It was when Crockett had bought UWF, but they were still running it separately. That brief period of time. And, during that time, there was a lot of stuff that you're like, really? Bubba Rogers is the fucking champion now?
Yeah.
I mean, that turned me off completely. I'm like, wait a minute. The show I like just opened with Jim Cornette's bodyguard is now the new champion?
Yeah.
I was like, that was to me. I'm like, I didn't realize how talented he was or could be. I'm
right,
like,
right.
That's stupid. But this was the shining thing at that time. And but they had Magnum come down there to be an announcer or ringside interviewer or whatever. And when Terry's talking to Magnum about the heel turn, and Magnum's calling him out, and he's just all, and Terry Taylor's hilarious. He's like, hey, man, you know, they, I don't know what you're looking at. It's like, he's been waiting to do this for 10 years.
Yep.
he's been such, hey, hi, how you doing, folks? Oh, shucks. He got a chance to be a bad guy, and he was tremendous.
And he was the master of the rats, too. He would get so many, man. I remember watching that guy. Just, he'd go out and like point to girls, then come back to the back into the locker room with him. Stud muffin. Massive stud, I'll tell you that much.
But I hear about backstage stuff. There's people who love Terry Taylor. There's people who hate Terry Taylor.
Yep.
I think a lot of it has to do with he's got a weird sense of humor, dry. I think it was in the Foley's book as well. He said that Terry Taylor would like walk up to you backstage, say, hey, tell me something. I was curious. Who's your favorite wrestler and why is it me?
Yeah.
I think that's funny as fuck.
Yep.
I can see how that would rub people the wrong way, especially in this business.
Uh-huh.
But I think that's hilarious. I'm a huge Terry. I've always was. Because also, if you grew up in the magazine era of the 80s, Terry Taylor was apparently a big deal.
Yeah, oh yeah, he probably gave, you know, he worked the sources and gave information out, and, you know.
They loved him, though, man. This PWI, they loved Terry Taylor.
Yeah, he was a oddball in a way because he's a guy I always wanted on my roster because, I mean, especially now and then, he could be a face or a heel. He could work on top. He could work in the middle. He could work underneath. He could be a tag team. He could be a singles guy. Mm-hmm. He could actually be a TV champion and as a heel. I mean, he was a guy who you could plug him anywhere on your card, and he'd be the vet trying to teach guys how to work, like they did with him and Dustin Rhodes in like '91. The guy just could go and could work. I don't think he's the greatest worker of all time, but I thought he was a really smart worker.
He's really good.
Yeah.
I mean, Terry Taylor is excellent. I'd say he's an excellent wrestler.
Oh, okay.
You know, I'm not gonna say no. When I say excellent, I mean like, you know. I think hundreds of guys are excellent. Then there's like another level, but
yeah.
I think Terry Taylor's a great wrestler. But I just want to mention this before we move on about the PWI thing, because it's still one of my favorite stories of when you read the magazines and they just make up their own shit.
Right.
Yeah. My favorite one was the secret wager between Terry Taylor and Magnum TA. I was like, ooh, what's this? And it was all about, oh, no, no. Whoever wins the NWA title first. So it's all about how. Yeah, yeah. So it's all about how Terry Taylor, who, by the way, was not in Crockett at the time either, and Magnum TA are really good friends, and they've got a bet because they're both shoo-ins to win the NWA title at some point or another.
Right.
It's only a matter of who's going to do it first. And they've decided to come up with a wager. And then here's the terms of their wager. The loser has to come down to the ring dressed as a woman and be the other guy's valet for 30 days Because, you see, no, because, not to embarrass them, yeah, because it's all joshing and in good fun, because they go, you know, Magnum and I really hate these valets and the way they interfere in wrestling. Ain't that right, Magnum? Yeah, it is, Terry. And yeah, so we thought it'd be funny if we made fun of them by having that be the end of our bet. I'm reading this at like 15, whatever.
And I bet you at the time, I bet you Terry Taylor was feuding with Dick Slater and Dark Journey.
Yeah, exactly.
And Magnum was with Tully and Baby Doll.
No, totally, totally. That's exactly right. And I remember reading this going, okay, I already knew that they make shit up, but I could work for this magazine. I'm 15. I could just sit around and make shit up like this all day fucking long. It just blew my mind. I'm like, I love that story so much. Because I was like, hey, someone got paid for that. But it is also indicative. All the young lions of wrestling were future NWA champions. Yep. And they always listed Terry Taylor.
Yeah, he was. He was always a guy. Him and Magnum were definitely two.
Barry Windham. Guys.
Barry Windham. Those are
Gary.
Gary. Butch Reed, even at times.
they'd still throw Tommy Rich into that mix after he was already 40.
Yeah, David Von Erich, yep. What now? Then let's talk about the dark side of Terry Taylor, which is not even a dark side, but the Red Rooster gimmick. Is that really one of the worst gimmicks on somebody you've ever seen? Or, I mean, does it get much worse? There's T.O. Hopper and Freddie Joy Floyd, but those are jobber gimmicks anyway.
This is just... Here's the thing about the Rooster thing. And to this day, I don't get it. I don't get it. I'm like, what's... I mean, okay, T.O. Hopper, that was what they said. We're going to have a group of undercard guys.
But now Red Rooster wasn't part of that. Right.
But I'm like, okay, T.O. But I'm like, okay, it's Dirty White Boy.
Yeah.
And Freddie Joe Floyd, you know. But not guys you immediately recognized.
Right.
Unless you really followed Southern wrestling.
Yeah.
This was Terry Taylor. It's like, we all know who fucking Terry Taylor is. And I'm like, okay, we're going to change him and give him something. That's what happens at WWF. I was not watching it this time, but I was aware of all this shit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he's the Red Rooster. I'm like, I don't get it. I don't, it's not like it's a rib on you. You know,
yeah.
it just seems like, I'm like, where did that come from? It never even bothered me as much. I was like, I don't get it. And then it was like Bobby Heenan came up with it, and it's this brilliant idea. And when they turns babyface, he's like, oh, fuck you, Heenan. And he's like, I'm going to still call myself the Red Rooster to piss you off. And I was like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, worst feud ever, bringing the Lombardi as the Brooklyn Brawler.
The Lombardi part I liked when it was Heenan going, I can make anybody a star.
Let me get this guy.
That part, loved that part. But I'm just like, I don't get why a rooster. It's so random. Just why not call him the Green Frog something?
I just can't remember where it came from, actually.
I'm sure there is. I've never heard it.
But yeah, it was just, I just remember towards the end of the gimmick, he starts showing up without the red in his hair. And I'm like, why does he call himself the Red Rooster? He doesn't have the rooster anymore. You could tell he just wanted out of that fucking gimmick.
Dude, right around the same time, Dusty stopped wearing polka dots and started wearing that cool cowboy hat with the bones on it.
Yeah.
And Kerry Von Erich would come out wearing a robe that said Kerry.
Yeah.
They just didn't give a shit.
Just wanted out. Well, we're going to take our final break, and we'll be right back.
The PWO-PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only. So it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And we are back. And we're back to our final match, which is Buzz Sawyer versus Chavo Guerrero. TV title at stake on April 25th, 1986. It's sad we got like 16 minutes of a match, 17 minutes. There was a 20-minute time limit. I'm guessing the way this match was structured was that Chavo, because it was non-title match, and it says in the results Chavo won. So I'm guessing Chavo probably scored like a pinfall in like the last second or two. Because I don't know about you, but I felt they were clearly working to a draw. I mean I was really looking forward to this match, and I still enjoyed it. We get some mic work from both guys early with Buzz really getting the crowd. We see Chavo working a mid-Atlantic style match, where he's working the arm, and every now and then he'd go after the arm really, really hard, but for the most part, he was content to just latch onto the arm bar, which to me screams out time limit draw. But for his part, it really helped out with the narrative of the match. He'd drop an elbow and miss it. Thus, you know, he was doing damage to the already worked over arm. Chavo would work the arm. Another point, Buzz charged Chavo into the corner, miss him, and then takes the shoulder bump into the corner. Again, Buzz is fucking up his own arm, which Chavo's keeping the work on. Buzz cheats to get the heat. He slams Chavo on the floor and starts working the back. Irish whip into the guardrail and back to the back. And unfortunately, the finish isn't recorded. Overall, I liked the match. It told a story, and it just lacked some spark to me. But I thought, technically, it worked what it needed to do, and I gave it 3 stars. I kind of wish we would have got the finish to flush it out a little better than guessing how it ended, because it was clear on some of the work, especially the arm work that Chavo was doing, and the way he was reacting to it. It felt like he thought they were building to a longer style Broadway, but I think they probably got a flash pin at the end. But overall, though, both these guys are interesting and are both good workers, and I think they have a better match in them. But what do you think, Johnny?
Well, I've got a bunch of stuff, but first I just want to talk about the arm bars.
Okay.
Because, you know me, I hate arm bars.
Yeah.
I didn't even appreciate the Andersons when I was a teenager because of all the fucking arm bars. I hated it.
They were fantastic at it.
I did, and I'd watch it, and I hated it. I was like, that's boring. I was 15. I watch it now. I'm like, oh no, those are brutal arm bars. I get it. And Chavo's at this started with, I'm like, okay, babyface arm bar match. And then they did a few spots where Buzz just can't shake him off. And the way Buzz is selling this arm bar, one part he's like, he's gonna break my arm to the ref. And he's hanging on, and he's clinging on to that armbar. I'm like, oh, okay, so it hurts. Okay. But yes, it keeps going back to the armbar. To the point where it goes from something I hate to something I'm like, really? Still? It becomes hypnotic.
Clearly clearly working a long match, right?
Oh, but I've seen that before and realized that and go, there was just something about the way they were doing it. And then the fact that I was just like, I can't believe they're going back to the fucking armbar. But Chavo's selling it. And a big part is, and there's no announcing on this,
right,
is the crowd. Because while the entire crowd isn't going apeshit, there's a significant portion of the crowd going apeshit. Specifically, my favorite guy in the world, who's at ringside for most of these matches that we've talked about, there's a Mexican family at ringside. There's a grandfather, and he is a weathered, leathery old man in a, you know, John Deere cap and everything. Definitely a farmer, and he's awesome throughout all of this, but especially during this match. Because this is what he's really into, because he's super behind Chavo. And he's just screaming and hooting. And there's a chick going crazy at some point just, Chavo, no, yes, please. And I'm like, you just listen to them while that's all going on, and it all comes together and it all works. As far as the mic work at the beginning, Buzz, you stupid looking Mexican. Guerrero family don't mean nothing to me, bar. Which is something I've always loved about Buzz Sawyer. And it's not just his promos, it's the way he wrestles, the way he approaches a guy before they lock up, even the weird way he walks, that little tiny thing he does where you're like, oh, he's crazy, right? He's really crazy.
Right.
He's not like going, I'm crazy. There's something about that guy, you're like, no, that the motherfucker's not right. You know, and every little move he does, he's always been one of my favorite wrestlers. I love Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer.
Ditto.
But then also, we got Chavo coming back, gets on the mic. He goes, your words, they mean nothing. Put up the belt, big mouth. Yeah, put up the belt. Yeah, you can call me anything you want. I don't give a fucking shit. You want to fucking bag it up? Fucking put up the belt, big mouth. I'm like, fuck yeah, Chavo, tell him what for. And he's like, you don't deserve a title shot. You got to earn one.
Yep.
And then they have the match. Buzz does the, he keeps saying he's pulling his hair. And you know, Buzz has the same hairline I do right now.
Sad.
None. And at one point, the old man yells, you hear him yell, he doesn't even have any hair. Come on. Loved it. And then as it went from armbar and I was like, I got invested in it. Then it started, the heat started picking up, you know, and I'm like, ooh, shit's starting to happen. And I am now super invested in this match. I'm in the front row with that family. And at one point, Chavo gets out of a hold by biting him. Because, yeah, the Mad Dog bites. You know, he's biting. He's also Guerrero. He cheats.
Right.
I was like, yeah, that's awesome. And Chavo's out at ringside, all beat up. And this old man is running over to check on him and stuff. And I'm like, who the fuck is this feeble old man? He's not the ref. And I'm like, oh, fuck, that's Paul Bosch. This was 86, right?
Oh, yeah. April.
Yeah. So he was aged at that time, but he was still at ringside.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't realize it was him. Still stylish, but definitely like, ooh, that guy's like 80. But that's commitment to his product, man. He's 80 years old, and he's out there fucking ringside. And then as I'm super into it, I think there's a bear hug going on, and yeah. It comes across the screen. And it goes, unfortunately, at least I think it said unfortunately, the finito, the end of this match was not filmed. And I'm like, oh, fuck. It went from this armbar fantasy world that transfixed me into super exciting, and then go, sorry. I was like, oh, god damn it.
Yeah, I didn't get too upset because I knew we only had 3 minutes left, so
I didn't know any of that. Yeah, I'm just like, oh. We ought to end the show like that. You just cut.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I hear you, man. You've seen a lot more Buzz Sawyer than Chavo Guerrero growing up, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What was like one of your highlights of Buzz?
Oof. Let's see. Furry boots.
Yep.
Love the furry boots. Actually, my highlight of Buzz, actually, is Babyface Buzz. And because when I first discovered Crockett, NWA, in 85.
Yep, facing Kelly.
It was, yeah, exactly. You know exactly the match I'm talking about. Yep. It was a
really good match. Yep.
I had, it was on Worldwide.
Yep.
And it was like maybe 3 weeks after I discovered this. You know, I remember it was just one Saturday. I was at my grandma's and I was like, I'm gonna flip around. Is there like this other wrestling out there? And I found Pro Wrestling USA that day and I found Worldwide that day. And this was a few weeks later, about or a month later, and it was Mad Dog Buzz. And number one, I barely knew who both these guys were, but I knew both guys were, as we used to say, winners. And this was a winner's match for a belt on television? And it was going down to the time limit, and I'm like super vested in this crazy motherfucker with the big furry boots who's mad dog. I was like, he's gonna win that belt from this dude, this asshole guy. Super invested for that day one. Huge Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer fan, and his heel work, of course, is far better.
What is your favorite feud of his? Mine is the Duggan one. I think that's like an incredible feud.
Gotta be Duggan. It's gotta be Duggan.
That thing is incredible. And we've got another like we've gotten one match here so far, one or two matches here on NWA On Demand. But yeah, that thing was just an epic, one of the all-time great brawling feuds.
I wish we had even more of the Rich stuff.
Yeah.
Look at that. But
yeah.
Definitely based on available footage. The Duggan, especially based on that one match that was like, was it Anything Goes or just turned was a dog collar or something?
The dog collar's on here.
Okay, there was the Anything Goes one that they end up in the locker room.
Yeah.
And shit. That's awesome. Oh, that match is awesome.
Yeah, and I'm hoping we get a couple more matches from him here to come up on NWA On Demand. So it will help us flesh out that feud.
It's one of those things out there. I always hate this. Pardon me. Feels like, yeah, you know, he was a real asshole and scumbag in real life. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, it doesn't really. I've never really got into that. Unless there's things like, you know, Benoit killing his kid.
Okay. I'm just saying sometimes, like, well, you know, Bad Dog. I'm like, yeah, he was a prick in the wrestling business. I get it.
Yeah, same thing like with Jimmy Snuka. It doesn't bother me that he's, you know.
I'll even say even then, the fact of the matter, I look back on one of my childhood heroes killed somebody. I'm talking like, Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer just ripped people off.
Yeah.
You know, and all this stuff. Like, oh, and he was a prick and all this. And I was like, well, you know, he was a prick in the wrestling business in the 80s. Join the fucking club.
Yeah, you know him and he went to high school with Tommy Rogers.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that's how they became friends.
Oh, friends. Because I'm picturing Buzz Sawyer, you know, eating his boogers underneath the bleachers. You know, or smoking cigarettes on the corner, and Tommy Rogers just being like a jock with a Letterman's jacket.
Yep.
He's pulling a lot of pussy.
Exactly. Well, that was NWA On Demand this week. Remember, $8.99, you get the first week free. You have no excuses if you only want to watch it on a Roku. Well, I've given you the information. It'll be in the show notes. So, I mean, guys, check it out. Bruce is putting stuff on YouTube, giving you a little taste of it. And we'll be back next month. Johnny, do you have anything you got on next week? Johnny, you have anything you got to plug?
The only thing I want to plug is if anyone's looking for a really, really funny TV show, I just watched season one of Baskets with Zach Galifianakis, and it might be the funniest thing I've seen in years. So check it out if you need a giggle.
Hulu or Netflix?
It's on Hulu right now.
Okay, man, I gotta check that out. All right, man.
Or Netflix, one of the two.
All right, man. Everyone, have a good week, and we'll see you next week. So I pout like a grown jerk. Wish it all I had to do now was finish homework. It's true, you don't realize really what you got till it's gone, and I'm not gonna sing another sad song. But sometimes I do sit and reminisce and think about the years I was raised. Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid again. Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid. And everybody says, when I was young, I'm not a kid. And everybody says, I sit and wish I was a kid. And everybody says, when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and